You're listening to the MMAMadhouse.com Clips of the Week.
What really happened on that Thursday here at Augusta High School that led to Chris Wood's death?
The fuck is that? Shit! I'm dying in this fucking country ass fucked up town. Shit flying in my mouth. The fuck, I can't see pollen. Let's get the fuck out of this country, motherfucker. I can't even see me.
Make sure to check out our full lineup of shows on the MMA Madhouse Production Radio Network. Sundays with Sunday Night Fights. Mondays with The BS Show. Tuesdays, Rage in the Cage Radio. Wednesdays, Madhouse Live. Thursdays, Caged Zombie Radio. And Fridays, The Rogue Show.
We'll be right back. Right on, and we are back live now with Derek Maimon getting ready for a big fight at World Series of Fighting 14. Derek, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
You got it, man. Absolute pleasure to have you. Now, you got a really awesome opportunity ahead of you here. Obviously, World Series of Fighting is doing some huge things, and they've announced some really major plans for 2015, but World Series of Fighting 14, right around the corner, and you're facing off the heavyweight championship fight. How are things going? How's fight camp been, and how are you feeling?
Man, I'm feeling great. I'm ready to go. I'm feeling stronger than ever. Fight camp has been amazing. You know, I just have been surrounding myself with amazing people. You know, Steve Carl, you guys just had him on a couple weeks ago or last week. And Otman Benjelani, he's this amazing kickboxer. My boy Brian, he's my strength conditioning coach. It's going amazing. So don't ask for better.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something, or I was kind of looking at a few of your tweets here within the last week, and some very, very entertaining stuff there. You said something like, hey, you know, World Series of Fighting, let me save you some time and just mail me the strap now. Obviously feeling very confident. You're 3-0, you know, you're 3-0 in the World Series case, 6-0 in your last, I mean, you've been undefeated since May of 2012, so just over 2 years ago. So kind of talk about that confidence. You know, obviously you're feeling confident, you're ready for this fight. You know, how's that kind of played into getting to see some very entertaining tweets from you?
Yeah, man, it's just my confidence is through the roof. I'm just ready to rock, ready to put my fist in this kid's face and really beat him up. I just don't think he's ready for this yet. If anything, man, like I'm already the World Series of Fighting heavyweight champ, man. I'm the only guy in the organization at heavyweight that's went 3-0. I beat everybody they put in front of me. Knocked out Gracie. The other two dudes they put in front of me, I knocked them down, almost knocked them out. Pretty hard-headed dudes. And this kid I'm going to knock out. He's just not as hard-headed. And I'm just ready to put my fist in his face, like I said. You know, and those tweets, I'm just having some fun, you know. I'm trying to prod that kid into a little bit of it. All he does is favorite or retweet my stuff, whatever. I guess he has no emotion. It's all good.
Now, you've been able to fight for some awesome promotions, you know, in what's a short, I say young career. I mean, you're still very young, obviously still probably just hitting the prime of your career. And you've been fighting professionally since 2006. You fought for mainstream MMA. You fought for Bellator, Strikeforce. You fought for Fight Time down here in Florida. Actually, that's around my territory. World Extreme Fighting, and now obviously the World Series of Fighting. You know, you're on the verge of a heavyweight title there. Talk about that experience. You know, obviously getting a fight for some major promotions. Got a lot of great experience, and yet you're only not even 30 years old.
Yeah. Man, like, you know, I've just said, like, I feel like it's been a short career in my head, but I guess, you know, on paper it's kind of been a long career. And to be honest with you, I made some stupid mistakes early in my career that I probably shouldn't have, but that I've learned such great things from, you know what I mean? I just am so experienced from it, and I've gained so much knowledge from all my experience, you know, all my fights. Like, and fighting for Strikeforce was amazing. Zuffa just bought him out there. They were throwing huge shows. I got a fight in San Jose. The night that Cormier beat Barnett, man, that was an amazing experience. And Strikeforce really, them in particular, gave me, like, an insight into what professional fighting is all, you know what I mean, like, at an elite stage. And, you know what I mean, after I lost my fight in Strikeforce and obviously wasn't brought over into UFC, I just, you know, it took a time to reevaluate my life and career, and it's been better ever since, so.
Now, we talked, as you mentioned, we talked to Steve Carl last week, and he was telling us about how he likes to travel to different gyms around the country, get a different feel for all the different styles, all the different training varieties. Are you like him in that way? Do you like to go to the different gyms, experience all this, all that they can offer, or do you prefer to stay at just one gym for a training camp?
You know what? I'll travel a little bit for a gym if it's, like, the right training partners to somewhere, you know what I mean? Other than that, like, no, man, Steve's my best friend. He's a super awesome guy. Like, that's just his personality, dude. He likes to get out on the road. He'll drive. It's nothing for him to drive 12 hours, train, and then turn around and drive back. Like, that's his mentality, I guess, dude. He's just a wild man. But no, like, you know what I mean? Like, I like staying around here. I got a kid. I got a wife. You know, it's hard for me to hit the road. So, you know, if anything, if I ever do get around to doing some training, I'm going to head back to ATT. And, you know, I mean, I miss them a lot. And can't wait to get back down there for sure. But other than that, no, I kind of just stick around here and train.
Now, you know, in this time here, before coming to the World Series of Fighting, obviously you had a couple local fights out of the Iowa area. Who contacted you? You know, how did the World Series of Fighting contract come about? What was your first impressions, you know, for World Series of Fighting 5, your first time stepping in the cage, and kind of translate that into now? You know, obviously fast forward to now, the time you spent with the promotion obviously put yourself in a very good position with the promotion. Just tell me a little bit about what it was like signing with them and then kind of your experience with them going into your fourth fight into the promotion.
Signing with World Series of Fighting kind of came out of the blue because all I was doing was I had, like, under some circumstances, I moved back to Iowa, and I just started fighting, like, and I was talking to my manager, Mickey, from KO Dynasty, and when I got cut from Strikeforce, they were like, get some wins, well, we can do something, we'll bring you back, come to the UFC or whatever. So that was my initial goal, obviously. Like, you know, I'm going to win these fights. Well, after my third win, Mickey had just signed Elvis to World Series of Fighting, so I just jumped on that bandwagon, signed with them too. And it was surreal. Like, I knew signing with them, you know what I mean? I hadn't fought at elite level at heavyweight, you know? And I was signed to fight Hollis Gracie. So, you know, it was a win-win for me. I was getting brought in, you know what I mean, to, like, not sugarcoat anything. I was getting brought in to lose to Hollis Gracie and help build his career, you know, and make him a superstar in World Series of Fighting. Well, I like ruining plans, so that was super great. And then it's just been awesome ever since. You know what I mean? World Series of Fighting, you know, we've had our differences, our ups and downs, but, you know, they treat me really well. They keep me really, really busy, man. I fought 3 times this year so far, or this will be my 3rd time this year, so I can't complain. I just signed a 4-fight extension with them, so hopefully I have a good thing going. And they just said, what'd they say, 2015 they're doing the pay-per-view thing? I'm down for that.
Right on.
Actually, I'm down for that.
Yeah, I mean they're doing huge things. I mean it's remarkable, really. You know, in such a short career, you know, I watched World Series of Fighting 1, thinking, who are these people and where did they come from? But in such a short time, they've really put themselves on a major level, and I'm glad to see them having great success. I've been able to actually be at 3 of their shows. I was actually at your World Series of Fighting 8. Fight. I was there down in Hollywood, so getting to see a few of their shows live, experience them live, see what they're like, meet Ray Sefo, meet Ollie. It's really a great promotion run by some awesome people, and I'm glad to see some really cool things happen. I'm glad to see them really stacking divisions. Now you mentioned the move to heavyweight. Now you had spent, you know, a good portion of your career, you fought at light heavyweight a bit. You even had at one point a 190 pound catchweight fight. Tell me a little bit about the move to heavyweight. Why did you decide to do that? And obviously, it's paid off for you.
Man, to me, it was a long time coming. Like, I talked about after my first fight in Strikeforce, I was talking to the coach at ATP about, you know, like, maybe moving up to heavyweight. You know, I had just a tough fight with Roy Jones in my Strikeforce fight, big gash from my head. And I was just like, man, let's put some weight on. Let's go to heavyweight. We got all this time. Strikeforce wasn't throwing a lot of shows at the time. You know what I mean? There was like that transition period when Zuffa bought them. And it just kind of never happened. Like, you know what I mean? I was sold out. Now I just stayed at 205. You got momentum going. So after I lost to Villante and I had to move to Iowa, I was like, well, there's no better time than now, you know? So I just got in the weight room, packed on some weight, and started fighting the heavyweight. And it's been working out really great ever since. So really happy I did it.
Yeah. I mean, heck, your debut fight at heavyweight there on the large scene was a nice first round finish, as you said, in a fight where it's quite possible you were probably being put in there to help his record, as you mentioned, and you go in and you're able to finish him.
Sure, there was no doubt I was brought in to lose. There was no doubt, which makes it even that much more sweet. You know what I mean? So
absolutely, man. Now as you begin to approach the fight here, we're about two weeks out from the fight here to the 11th. So how do you start to kind of narrow down on that last week of training? You know, a lot of fighters I've witnessed personally, the last week is kind of you kind of go easy, you kind of go smooth a little bit. You don't want to risk anything. How do you approach kind of those last few days before the fight takes place?
You know what? I kind of go the complete opposite. I still got, you know, I got tomorrow and Saturday and then take Sunday off. And then I got a hard week ahead of me, man. Monday through Saturday is going to be just as brutal as this last week was. And it's going to be, you know, I mean, there's going to be fine tuning and things like that. And probably not as much contact, but like physical exertion wise, it's going to be just as hard as any other week, if not harder. And, you know, I mean, we'll start tapering down next Sunday. And then that's real fight week, you know what I mean? Not really do a whole lot until fight time and come in there super fresh, but coming, you know, I like to push it real hard 2 weeks out. So
now, what is going to be probably? You know, let's say you win the title. What's the first thing you do when you get back home? Do you take time off, or do you kind of go right back into things?
Man, I'm getting right back into it. My wife and I are buying a house, so we're going to be remodeling that, a fixer upper. Getting into that, taking some time off to get that done, I guess, but. Man, Steve will probably have a fight, so I'll be back in the gym for there, and I'll be ready to fight again, man. Like, I told World Series of Fighting, I will fight every 3 months. And, I mean, I'm 29 right now, not getting any younger, and a great part of my career, but, you know what I mean, now's the time to get all my fights in, you know what I mean? I'll fight 3 or 4 months, for sure.
What's your favorite thing, I mean, since you've been in this, been a pro fighter, you know, being a guy that's very active, you're talking... 23 fights going on, a 24th fight. You're only 29 years old. What's your favorite thing from the sport that you've kind of taken from the sport so far? And when time comes down the road where you want to, you know, hang things up and move on, what would you like to be the biggest takeaway that you got while being part of the sport?
Oh, man, just the memories, dude. It's like, I'm very blessed, man. I've been able to travel the world, see so many great things and people, you know, like been to California, been to Florida, trained in Florida, been to New Jersey, been to Vegas, cornered some guys in Russia, got to corner the world's strongest man in Poland. But the sport of MMA has just opened the world to me, literally, you know what I mean? And it's just, like, such a great journey. Like, if it ended tomorrow or if it ends whenever, it's just, I'm so grateful for what it's all given me, you know? And yeah. not to mention, like, the work ethic. Like, it just... like kind of coming from college wrestling and into fighting, like it just gives you work ethic for the rest of your life and whatever career path you choose afterwards. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. Let me ask, who was a tougher opponent, Dave Huckabee or Scott Barrett?
Barrett. Nah,
yeah.
Hold on. I'll take that back. Huckabee. I don't know. They're pretty equal. Dude, I'll tell you this. There are two super tough dudes, and this is going to sound, you're like, wow, this guy's pretty conceited, but I literally hit both those dudes with shots that I was like, holy shit, they're still not out. Like, they were just, they're beasts, man. They are beasts. But, yeah, they're both real tough dudes, man. Super tough, durable fighters.
Okay, so you can't pick yourself here. What do you think has the potential to be one of the most exciting fights on World Series of Fighting 14?
Chris Rodecki, you know what I mean? He's always super fun to watch. I'm actually, like, a little starstruck because I remember, like, watching him in the WEC, and then when he first got in the UFC, you know what I mean, and being able to, like, be ahead of him on the card is pretty crazy to me, you know what I mean? So I'm pretty excited to watch him fight.
Right on. Well, but listen, before we let you go, you know, go ahead and give some shout-outs to your sponsors, where people can find you on social media, and then any other shout-outs that you want to give.
Yeah, you can just follow me at Derek Maimon on Twitter, Derek Maimon on Instagram. We need to get my boy Steve Carl a fight in World Series of Fighting ASAP. Let's get that fight done. That's my shout out. Let's get Steve Carl a fight.
Exactly.
Right on, man. Right on, Derek. Well, listen, Derek, thank you so much for joining us, man. You have yourself a great night. We'll look forward to seeing some awesome work from you at World Series of Fighting 14 here in just a couple weeks.
Cool, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, dude. You have yourself a good night.
Bye.
Derek Maimon, folks. Derek, if I'm not mistaken, I lost my window. Hold on. Derek the Caveman Maimon. There we go. I was wondering. I passed by that earlier. And I believe that we are live with Andrea Lee. I'm sitting here blabbing on about this, and we got Andrea sitting here waiting on the phone. Welcome in the newest Invicta FC fighter. How are you, Andrea?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Okay, first and foremost, how does one win a fight by TKO broken finger?
You know, it was freak. I don't want to say that it was an accident because, I mean, you know, I was trying to kick her, but you know, it just happened. She blocked. She had her hand open, and I just caught her finger at a weird angle, and you know, broke it in half. Crazy.
And the bone was literally hanging out of her skin, was it not?
Yes, it was. It was a pretty gruesome sight to see. You know, it was definitely not something that happens every day in MMA. It's definitely going to go down as something to talk about for a while. I mean, people around here are still talking about it. They just think that's crazy, and that it was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah,
not for her.
probably not exciting for her. I saw her face. She was in disbelief. You looked a little confused. I don't think you really knew what was happening, and I don't think anybody knew what was happening. But
everybody was like, "This kid called a timeout in MMA." They're like, "Keep fighting." But yeah,
well, I mean,
I was definitely confused at first.
But hey, you know, it's a TKO. It's a first round victory. You get out of that fight kind of, you know, obviously. I think, you know, in hindsight now, you look at that and it's like, you know, probably couldn't have had a better debut. You know, you get an early first round finish, and in what, less than 2 months, you're strapped, you're ready to go for an Invicta FC fight. So I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened.
I think so too. You know, I mean, everything seems to happen for a reason. That was perfect setup for me. You know, I'm not injured in any kind of way, and I'm ready to go. I'm excited to get the fight for Invicta.
Now, when did you get the call?
I was actually ready to fight, you know. Do what?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I was already trying to find another fight, like, this weekend, but that fell through, you know, and now that I've signed with Invicta, that's the earliest fight that I'm going to have. But what were you saying?
I was going to say, you know, how did it go with Invicta? When did you get the call? Who did you talk to? And kind of just give us a rundown about how that all came into place.
They had been talking to us now for the past week, and my coach, manager / husband, you know, he does everything. He's been talking to Shannon Knapp and Julie Kedzie, and they've been going back and forth discussing stuff. And Julie was talking about how she was ready to make an offer. You know, they were just kind of worried about my whole XFC thing because I had signed with XFC, but because John Prisco stepped down, that kind of voided my contract, so that meant that I was up for grabs. And so they were ready to make an offer, but they didn't want to talk about it. You know, Donnie, he didn't want to talk about anything, you know, before my fight that I had coming up, you know, so they were like, well, we'll discuss everything after her fight, you know, when we all have a clear mind, and after my fight, they made an offer, and obviously we accepted it. So I'm really excited about that.
yeah, exactly right. Now I want to talk a little bit about like the combat sports like expo that you came out here for Orlando to do. I know you had a pretty big success out here with Black back in I think that was late July, early August or something. Tell me a little bit about how that went.
With Gladius?
I believe, yeah. I'm drawing a blank on what it was called. I know you did like a 2 or 3 day competition or a 1 day or something out. It was out in Florida, if I'm not mistaken.
It was like
out in Orlando.
For Fighter Stores, it was like the MMA tournament.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, that it was a lot of fun, actually. You know, I had no idea it was like that they were making it like a reality show. I just, you know, I accepted the fight because I had been having trouble getting opponents, and they were talking about this MMA tournament that they were looking for somebody, and you know, they needed somebody on a team, so I ended up fighting for Nashville, and they flew me into New York, and I got a fight. But as soon as we got there, it was like cameras were everywhere, and they were interviewing everybody, and I'm just like, whoa, I was not expecting this. So it was pretty interesting, and it was a lot of fun. I met a lot of really nice people, and my opponent was really nice too. After I won, you know, we got to talk, and New York was definitely not what I had expected it to be. I mean, I did expect to get a lot of looks because of my cowboy hat, which did happen. Everybody kind of looked at me like weird, but it was really pretty, and it was pretty up there, and everybody was pretty cool. So I enjoyed it. And then I got to meet Callie Cutler and Jim Gray, which I ended up getting to meet Amanda Bobby Cooper through them, and I got to train with them in Michigan out at SFS. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. So a lot of good stuff came from going on that trip. You know, it was definitely a memorable trip for me.
Now, you wrap up a beyond stellar amateur career, and you wrapped it up in a major fashion. You know, you went go out winning a bunch of fights and you competed like a lot in a very short amount of time to finish mm-hmm. that out, and then you go right into a fight as a pro over at GFA 27, and right, you know, before you know it, boom, you're already locked in and ready to go for your Invicta debut. I guess my question is, when do you rest?
You know, I ask the same thing. I mean, I don't really have a lot of downtime, obviously. It seems like the past year or two, I've just been constantly training and working towards my next fight. My coach, you know, Donnie, he, like I said, he is my husband. He pushes me hard every day, you know, and he wants me to be a world champion. And I want to be a world champion, too. He schedules me fight after fight, you know, because he wants me to get the experience that I need to be a better professional fighter. And it was really hard for us to get MMA fights as an amateur, so that's why we started taking all of these Muay Thai fights and kickboxing matches and all these tournaments. We just started doing as much as we could, because during the time that I couldn't find opponents to fight, for MMA, you know, we decided to find something else that would at least keep me busy, and it gave me a lot of things. It gave me the opportunity to work on things that I needed to fix. So, it is tiring. It's exhausting, but you know, the champions are made in the gym. So, what can I say? I have to keep training hard and fighting as much as I can if I want to be a champion one day, a world champion.
Now, did you get the chance to watch Invicta FC 8, and what were your thoughts on it?
I did get to watch it. I saw a lot of most of the fights were really good. I think that there's a lot of great talent in Invicta. I didn't get to really watch the main event. That's the one that I wanted to watch with Michelle Waters. It kind of froze up on me there at the end, so I was pretty bummed out about that. But other than that, all the other fights were really good. My opponent that I'm going to be fighting, she's making her Invicta debut as well. So I haven't seen her fight on Invicta yet. But I feel like it's going to be a good matchup.
Now,
sorry,
how does it feel knowing
that? Do what?
No, that's perfectly fine. I was going to ask off of that. How does it feel knowing you're going to be broadcasted, your fight's going to be broadcasted live on UFC Fight Pass?
I'm excited about that. You know, I mean, it's a big deal. And, you know, of course there's more, you know, there's pressure because it's going to be broadcasted and there's going to be a lot of people watching. And I'm going to try not to let that get to me, but I'm super excited about that. I want to show people, I want to show the world, you know, that all of my training and hard work has paid off, and I'm hoping to impress everybody. I want to come out on top with this fight. I'm hoping I stop Shannon Sinn in the first round. That's my goal, but that's everybody's goal.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, and Shannon Sinn is somebody who followed a little bit, and I think that's an awesome first fight for you for Invicta. I think that's an awesome matchup by Invicta. You know, do you feel like with Invicta kind of being wide open right now, obviously they've had a bunch of ladies go to the UFC for this tough season. And actually, before I ask you that, have you been watching this tough season? And if so, kind of what are your thoughts on it?
Yes, I have been keeping up with it. I think, you know, it's turned out I certainly wasn't expecting Tisha Torres to lose in her first fight.
Same here.
I thought that, yeah, everybody I know was probably shocked by that. I really thought that she was going to win that fight. So Randa did great and did a great job, and I do think that she did win that fight. You know, I mean, I'm glad, you know, that the underdog. I like to pull for the underdog a lot. So, you know, I mean, I'm glad that Randa won, but, you know, I'm sorry for Tisha Torres too, because I like Tisha Torres a lot. But I think that the show has actually turned out to be really good, and all the girls are really talented. Joanne Calderwood's my favorite. You know, I'm hoping, I want her to win. I'm picking her to win, but I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll just, this last fight ended a little too soon, but
I think that Lisa, you know, I hated watching that because I like both of those ladies a lot, and I thought that was going up to be a really good fight, but I just don't think that Lisa Ellis's heart was in it. I felt that way kind of the whole episode, that she just had her heart was at home, and I feel bad for her because I was really looking forward to seeing some good stuff for her after coming back after so long, and I hope to see still some awesome stuff from her. But yeah, I think that I just think that she wasn't in that fight, and I don't like to agree with Dana White, but I think that he was kind of right that she just wanted out of that fight.
I think so. You know, I think so too. I mean, like you said, you know, you could tell that her heart wasn't with it. Her heart was at home. You know, she's missing her baby, you know, and I understand. I mean, I think, she might even be ready to retire, you know. She might, that probably made her decide that, you know, she just wants to be home and be a family, you know, be a mom, you know. But, I mean, who knows? She might come back, you know, you never know. I did notice that, you know, there. I think Carla Esparza, you know, she's kind of freaking out about, you know, she hasn't been in the cage in a while. A lot of the women, a lot of the ladies haven't fought, it seems like, recently, or, you know, and they're kind of like freaking out because I don't know if they're freaking out. They're kind of nervous because they haven't been in the cage in a while. You know, and to me, I feel like that's why if I'm not fighting, I'm going to be doing something. I feel like, you know, you should at least take some pro boxing matches, take some pro Muay Thai, some kickboxing, do something to stay active. You know, because I feel like even if you're, like, contracted to an MMA, in an MMA contract, like I am contracted to Invicta for MMA, but I could still take Muay Thai fights on other promotions because that's something totally different. So, I mean, if I have a lot of downtime, I will be staying busy and staying active because I don't want to forget what it feels like to be in the cage. You know, I don't want to have a freak out incident like some of these girls are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, and I'm glad I brought up Tough. You know, I obviously wanted to focus the interview on you, but I'm glad I brought that up because I'd love to hear what you have to say on that. And it's cool to know that you obviously, being such a busy fighter, having so much going on in your own career, that you do keep up with the sport, you pay attention to those, and you got a lot of great opinions on the sport too, so I'm glad I could pick your brain a little bit.
Well, thank you.
Now back to your fight though. with it being kind of right around the corner, what do? You jump right back into a fight camp? I mean, did you even kind of get out of the fight camp mindset, or where, how do you handle things being that you've already got a fight, you know, just about a month out?
Well, see, I never stopped training. So I'm always in the gym. I'm always training, even after a fight. Like, I may take a day or two off, but that is about it. Actually, after this fight, I had Saturday. I fought on Friday, and I had Saturday off, and then I was back in the gym on Sunday. And I've been training since. I haven't had a day off since. Monday will be my next day off. But, I just stay busy that way that I'm always prepared. You know, it's harder to get back into shape once you get out of shape. It's easy to get out of shape. It's hard to get back into shape. So I just try to stay in shape after all of my fights. You know, I just stay active. Stay training.
Right.
I think that's just the best thing to do.
Absolutely. Now, do you like to watch kind of film of your opponents, or do you train for every opponent as if they were the same person?
I do watch film on my opponents. I study them, and I study who they fought. And, you know, we like to look at everything. You know, I'm going back to even Shannon's amateur career. You know, I mean, I want to know who she fought, who she beat, what was their record, and who did they beat? I mean, like, we checked everything. I mean, we go through to find out exactly, like, who's who, if she was fighting, like, any bums, if she fought, like, a bunch of, like, 0-2, 0-3, or 1-3, or, you know, I want to know exactly who she's been fighting and what style of fighter she's been fighting so that I could work on my game with her. But I hear that she's like a, she sees herself as a stand-up fighter, and so I think it's gonna be a fun fight, you know. But I feel like I got it, I got the ground taken care of too. So I mean, if it goes to the ground, you know, I feel confident there. But yeah, I do study her, and I have studied her footage too.
Yeah. Now, have you ever tried to fight with the cowboy hat on?
No, that wouldn't work. My hat would just fall off. Way
right
too
on.
Easily. It's not definitely not glued to my head. So.
Right on. Well, listen, Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. You know, we had you on the show once before, and it was kind of like right around the time where you had actually, hold on. I gotta. We have a listener question real quick for you.
Okay.
The listener said that they're asking, they're saying that, you know, a lot of people have said that Shannon Sinn could be probably the next big thing in MMA, and they want to know how you feel about that.
Well, I feel like we could all be the next big thing in MMA, but I don't feel very threatened by her. You know, I feel pretty confident about this fight. I think I'm not trying to talk badly about her in any kind of way whatsoever. I just feel like, you know, I might have the upper hand in this fight. I have more experience than she does, for sure. And, you know, I feel like I'm a lot stronger than her as well. But, you know, I mean, maybe she will be the next big thing, but who knows? I'm hoping to prove everybody wrong because I think I'm going to be the next big thing.
Right on. That's
but you
an
know
awesome
what?
Answer.
Also on Tapology, you know, they, not that that really matters, but I mean, the percentage of, not that it matters, but, you know, we have looked, you know, my coach has looked it up, you know, and on Tapology, it shows that everybody's expecting me to win.
Right on. Well, I guess we will see on November 1st.
We will see.
All right, well, before we let you go, I want to give you the opportunity to give a shout-out to your sponsors, coaches, and then where people can find you on social media.
Okay, awesome. Herbalife, I would like to thank all of my sponsors. Herbalife Nutrition, thank you for all of my supplements that you've helped me with. Cash Time, Larkin Development, Article 15 Clothing Apparel, Classic Stone, and for my gyms and my coaches, Karate Mafia, Donnie Aaron, and Elite Combat with Brent Mason. Also, if y'all want to contact me on, I'm on Twitter at Andrea Lee Aaron, at AndreaLeeAaron, and it's the same thing. It's from Instagram, Andrea Lee Aaron, and my Facebook page is Andrea KGB Lee. So please contact, you know, look me up and let my page, you know, I try to stay busy on everything. So anyways, that's about it. So thank you for having me on your show.
You got it, Andrea. You're welcome back anytime. You have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
Thank you. You too.
Looks like we've got our first guest ready, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on live. You ready?
Let's do it.
I'm super excited to talk to this guy. Nick, how you doing, brother? Welcome to the Sunday Night Fights Live.
Oh, I'm great, man. It's a pleasure to finally connect and talking to Ray for a while about this, and I'm here.
You know, just give a little background. You know, Nick has been with us from the beginning with Takedown. He's a Muay Thai practitioner. He's probably one of only two attorneys who I can stand, and probably because he can whoop my butt. So,
questionably,
your Muay Thai is a lot better. I'm better on the ground with my wrestling, but you know, we'll never find
out.
Yeah,
but you got to get him there, Ray. You got to get him there, man. He clinches up, man. Throw some knees to your liver. You're done.
Oh, definitely.
But you know what? Sometimes that Muay Thai takedown is a hindrance in grappling because a good wrestler is going to shoot a double and you're going to find yourself really quickly on the floor and not much recourse the Muay Thai provides you at that time.
Okay, Nick, you know, g- give our listeners a little background as to, you know, what you do. You know, you've done a lot in the sports industry, you know, on the legal side of it. So if you give them a little background on, you know, what you do.
Well, when I first started, I was actually in law school, and I represented professional basketball players overseas because, frankly, I got somewhat bored in law school. Believe it or not, it's a lot of sitting around learning things you're never going to really apply in the real world. And once I became a lawyer, I realized it wasn't big firm material. So about 2 or 3 years in, I started my own practice. I represent retired professional athletes in the workers' compensation claims. Those are retired NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, you name it. If you're a professional athlete, there's ability for you to file a workers' compensation claim. And I've also been still involved in athlete representation and negotiate a lot of contracts, analyze the contracts, and seen a lot of them that most people aren't privy to. And, you know, I'm not trying to drop names at all. The last thing I want to do is divulge any of my clients. But I've been in some rooms, and I've learned a hell of a lot just by listening.
Now,
go ahead, Skip.
You know, I think what you're involved in is really interesting. People, you know, everyone looks at this sport and they just think, oh, I buy a ticket, I show up, two guys walk into a cage, they scrap, we drink a beer, we go home. There's so much more on the backside of the sport, and something you do is, let's be honest, I mean, this is something nobody talks about. So I want to thank you, first of all, for coming on tonight and letting the fans get a little glimpse into something else that is involved in the sport that helps it keep running, you know, and hopefully correctly if it, you know, done right with people like yourself. So, you know,
yeah,
you know, what's like, how does this work for you? Do you go looking for fighters? Do fighters come to you? Do promoters point you into people? Do teams point you at people? I mean, how does this work for you to get a client?
This all works in MMA, in obtaining clients. I'd be more the person to come in when there's something, I mean, I hate to say it, when there's something really big brewing and they need someone to speak for them and to somewhat negotiate for them because they're devoting their time to their craft. They're devoting their time, their expertise, literally blood, sweat, definitely some tears here and there to what they do in the MMA lifestyle. Because MMA lifestyle, even the guys at the bottom card of the UFC, they're not, people are disillusioned to how much money they're making. But there is, you know, for what you're saying about what goes on in a fight, a whole lot goes on in a fight. I mean, people just think, here's a cage, they could do it in a barn somewhere, here's a cage, here's two guys who want to fight, and that's that. No, there's insurance, there's commissions you have to deal with. You know, all this, it's pretty much like putting on a wedding, but people are beating the hell out of each other. Just the
amount, like a Mexican wedding.
Effort that goes into it. A Mexican wedding, there might be more people showing up than some of these local shows. but that being said, just one thing I would tell a fighter, promoters are not to be trusted. They are not your friends. The only interest they have is selling tickets and padding their pockets. And it's just, they don't, honestly, unless your name is Dana White or Scott Coker at one point or Bjorn Redney, you're really not making that much money in the sport enough. And you're screwing guys over for not much of a gain.
And you know what, Nick has, he's got the background where you know what he's saying is true. Nick's been in the trenches. You know, he's studied under Crew Paulo Tocha. He's at PKG. He's cornered, you know, takedown fighters. You know, he's not the type of guy where, well, you know, everything he knows, he learned from a book. I mean, you know, Nick, he's very good at what he does as an attorney. But he knows the flip side, too. He knows what the fighter goes through. He's in there training. You know, not just, you know, once a week, or he's got a membership to, you know, the UFC gym or watches a Taibo video.
He's
Nick's
not
a real deal.
CrossFit junkie?
Don't bring up CrossFit in my presence. Yeah, no, that's a whole other that's a whole other show, and I could go on forever about that, but I want to keep it positive. We'll call it that. Yeah, I've been hit. I mean, you know, it's one thing, a certain amount of credibility comes with getting hit in the head of a lot. That a guy knows, like, hey, I've seen you spar with so-and-so. And a few times my crew brought me in just a stand-up, just being barely an amateur Muay Thai fighter to spar with a few MMA heavyweights. And that was fear, pure fear.
You know, I'll tell you what.
Because I'm just not with these guys.
If you ever walk into a gym in the alley area and you see a guy in the middle of the ring ready to do some Muay Thai and he's got blue gloves on and red hair, run. You don't want to get hit or kicked by this dude.
Because, it's one of those things that I don't do full-time because it's not what pays the bills for me, but it's a love that never goes away. I'm doing jiu-jitsu now, and I hope no one can really hear this if I train with. It's just not the same. It just really isn't the end of the day. I mean, it's a competition. It's you squaring up with somebody. It's you competing. It's breaking the will of another man. But there's nothing like just putting the pads on and just kind of rocking each other's brains a little bit. But, I just had a kid about a year and a half ago, and it's kind of limited, one, my training, and two, my ability to get my brain rattled, because running my own business, it's not going to work the next morning to have some of a fight hangover going. But, that's why I respect a lot of fighters so much who have children. I always put my money on the guy with kids because he has a certain motivation that, just some guy who lives with his girlfriend hanging out and wants to tell people he's a fighter has. No, this guy's literally fighting to put food on the table, fighting to provide for his family. And I think of one prime example, that just a guy that, Joe Soto fought, and that's Tarion Ware, who's I have a tremendous amount of respect for.
Oddly enough, you cornered him in his first camo tournament.
I sure did, and he surpassed me 10 times over in terms of his contribution to the fight game, skill, whatever it may be. And I was proud to do it, and sometimes I can't make it out to the fights, but I'm hitting refresh, I'm share dog. If the feed is there, I'm watching it, It's not just because, you spent time with someone, it's just you got to know this person and know how hard he, not just in the cage, but how hard and the sacrifice he has in life for, maybe not seeing your kid when he goes to sleep, knowing you have to work towards a bigger goal.
Now, we've got you here and we kind of can, find out some different things.
Am I talking too much, by the way?
No, you're doing fine, man. I want you to talk all you want. That's what the fans love about this show. Yeah. Yeah, don't feel like you're ever running off. You're totally fine. Talk as much as you want because, for fans out there, this is what they eat up. They don't know enough sometimes about the sport or they want to see a different side. And for fans out there, what's the one thing do you think fighters, when they come to you and they get your service, do you think they misunderstand about contracts and the fight business or the sports business in general?
Well, there's a lot of cliches out there that people throw out and they kind of lose meaning of it. Never let it, go in the hands of the judges. But one thing that people have to realize, and it sounds corny, but I always say it, and I look someone in the head, it's prize fighting, not pride fighting. You don't always have to take every fight. You don't always have to, you don't always just have to take a beating. You have to realize when you're being set up for a loss. A certain promoter, you could tell if it's his guy or like, hey, we'll fly you up to some armpit and you could fight this guy. And you get to the venue and there's 80 of his fans and two of yours. And you're thinking, oh, right now I'm a stepping stone. Avoid those fights. Unless you absolutely have to take them, but don't put yourself in a position where you have to take a bad fight. Be selective. It's your body. It's your livelihood.
We're going to kind of stick with fighters because that's what the base is. I know that you've looked at all sports, but when it comes to a fighter, what's your opinion on a fighter signing a one-term fight deal versus a long-term contract?
Well, a long-term fight contract, I've never seen a Bellator contract, seen a UFC, but I'm dying to get my hands on a Bellator contract. I've heard this secondhand, but it's some clause where if you refuse a fight that it prolongs your contract. But a short-term contract is the ability to be flexible. A short-term contract is because, a contract is you're essentially married to them at that point. Legally speaking, not, same-sex marriage. It's another dude, obviously. But you're married to these people with your own obligations and what you have to do under their contract. But I would just, and it depends. Do you want a fixed fight you know, six-figure fight, six-figure deal fight, six-fight deal with the UFC? Of course you do. Do you want to, I'm not going to name any promotion specifically, but do you want a, you know, a four or five fight promotion of the local show? No, and don't trust that contract, because one thing I do tell fighters is this, and actually I probably should have mentioned this earlier, is it's a very dangerous thing when there's a contract between two people and neither of them understand it. Because that happens a lot.
Man, I could not have said that better myself.
I'm curious, without saying any names, you know, obviously, you run into a contract. Let's say, you know, you take me, I'm your fighter. I call you up. I say, hey, man, these guys are offering me a great fight. You know, they tell me, you know, I could win a title off this. They're going to pay me 18-18. You know, I'm 4-0. And you get a copy of the contract and you're like, oh, there's no way in hell you're ever signing this piece of paperwork, son. You know, how do you handle that? I mean, you know, the fighter's pumped. He's excited. He, you know, everyone around him told him the title's his. And then you get a copy of this contract, and you're like, uh-uh.
Well, I could say but at the end of the day, you know, we all make we all put our big boy pants on. We all make decisions. I mean, who am I, one, to step in the way of someone's quote-unquote dream? However, I'll tell them, look, this is, I don't know how to put this constructively. This is complete crap. It's complete garbage. Signing this, it puts you in a world of hurt legally, financially, and possibly physically. And what they're saying to you does not reflect what's on this one page piece of paper. Another thing to fighters, never ever sign a contract that's only one page. Try to avoid that. There should be more in there. Even if it's just boilerplate, meaning things that don't generally apply, should be more in there, always.
Well, we've talked to a lot of guys, me and Ray, obviously, in the business Ray's in the business I'm in. You know, we've been blessed to sit there and talk with a lot of guys, and we've seen and heard stories about contracts that are, you know, some of them literally are written so illegally that it's funny, and some are written so well that they tie a fighter down and cost him things he didn't realize. You know, that is the prime reason why somebody like you in the sport is very important. You know,
thank you.
When you have maybe somebody that you bring on and he feels like he knows more than you, is that a hard situation to deal with?
Believe it or not, this occurs in my other legal ventures, you know, other things that I do. You can't just do one thing. You don't want to be the jack of all trades but master of none. You want to be good at what you do. You know, maybe three or four things, and I can honestly say I am. But when someone's being, a client is being very difficult, I have my obligations to them, but oftentimes, I mean, it's almost harsh, and it's not standoffish or confrontational. I say, hey, this is what I do. This is how I feed my family. This is, I'm over six figures in debt to call myself a lawyer. If you want to do this yourself, that's okay. Make a business decision. Tell me goodbye. I'll shake your hand. We'll call it a day. But, you know, if you really think and you're confident that you know this better than I do, you're always free to do it yourself. And now that sounds kind of harsh and mean, but I'm not, I just don't analyze a contract and I try to help you because it's for my health. No, you asked me to do this. There's trust between us. And if you don't like what I have to say, I don't know what to tell you. I've analyzed it the best I can, and it, on your best interest, and you believe that I'm not in your best interest at that point, we have to call it a day.
Earlier you were talking about, you know, how promoters don't trust them. You know, they're out to make the most money possible. And want to talk a little about what you were talking to me earlier about that fighter was offered $2,000 to go fight in Japan.
Right. I don't want to mention any names, and because I don't throw people under the bus, and it's actually a current client of mine. And his strength lies in other sports that wear gloves, that you wear gloves in, that you don't fight in a cage. And he's an undefeated heavyweight, meaning in boxing, that is that's a golden goose. That's something you pay attention to. And he was training, and he got offered to fight Hong Man Choi. and that's the only name I'm going to mention. And I'm pretty sure your listener base, Hongman Choi, I'm being 7 foot to 7 feet two, what, 330, 350, about that?
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to pay him $2,000 to fight him in Japan. Sure, they'll fly you over, but $2,000, essentially, to take a beating. Someone's donating their body to pad the record of a guy that is essentially, I don't believe in calling people freak shows, but Japanese mixed martial arts appeals to that. You know, minimal man versus a 7 foot, a guy like Hongman Choi. That happened. Fedor versus Hongman Choi. All the guys they brought over in the early 2000s.
Look at Bob Sapp. He's just a prime example.
That's a name right out of my mouth. Bob Sapp. You know, 6'5", 340 pounds with abs. That doesn't happen in nature. And, you know, he had a good run for what he did. But the thing, the sport just got too technical, and heavyweights just stopped looking like a bar fight, and guys really got better. You know, that's pretty much, you know, Ricardo Rona, Nogueira, you know, and Fedor even. He made heavyweights better, even though he wasn't a true heavyweight. You know, my eyes light up every time I hear about Fedor still.
Well, I mean, okay, speaking about, you know, heavyweights getting better, you look at guys like Brock Lesnar and Cain Velasquez. These are big boys, and they move like, you know, 145 pounders.
Cats. They move like cats, almost everybody. I mean, if you watch a heavyweight fight from 2000, let's call it 3 or 4, it doesn't look like what it does now. I mean, I just saw that the fight. I don't think it was a prelim with Mitrione versus the guy who called him out. Those guys move fast. I mean, that's a retired NFL player. That's a hell of an athlete. And, you know, he wasn't an offensive lineman, so he wasn't slow. I think Mitrione, was he a linebacker?
Hey, I played O-line. What's wrong with O-linemen?
Yeah, nothing wrong with O-linemen. It's just they're not known to be swift, unless their name's Orlando Pace.
And they're not the sharpest tool in the shed. We'll just throw that out there. You never heard anyone get the Wunderlich score, huh?
I resemble that remark.
Offensive linemen get very high Wunderlich scores. It's the defensive linemen who don't have very high Wunderlich scores. The lowest Wunderlich scores are defensive backs. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, but because that's an instinctual position, so they don't really care about a high Wunderlich score.
Yeah,
the Wunderlich score, I've known people who went through it. It's really, it's deceptive of how smart people are. I invite anyone. They have mock Wunderlichs all over ESPN. Google it, take it, and see how you do.
Well, let me ask you, you know, with your ability to look at other sports and, you know, maybe take things and use them to your advantage in the combat sports world, do you think something like, a Wunderlich score, a standard, you know, like combine kind of thing where you bring the – you know, the top 200 fighters in each weight class together to do that. Do you think the sport will evolve that far to have something like that in MMA?
Well, there'd never be teams in MMA, any legitimate. I know they did the IFL, but I think the combine, it lends itself to which team will take who. UFC and Bellator, they're not going to say, okay, you take him and you take him. It's not going to work that way, but... I just don't see it foreseeable as a combine. I think they need to screen fighters no matter what a lot better than they do, no matter what, for, you know, health ailments and whether they really should be in there, especially at the amateur level. I mean, some of the amateur fights, I mean, it's like, why? What's that kid doing in there? I know certain gyms in L.A. where they let a guy train for 3 months, like, oh, are you ready to fight? And that's it. No, that process, it deserves far more respect than that.
But I understand what you're saying, and being a manager, I wholeheartedly agree with you. But then you look at, you know, I'm going to throw his name out there. You look at a fighter like Ty Bethley. You've seen Ty train. You've seen Ty fight. He took a year off, came back as a completely different fighter. You know, since he came back, he's 1-1. He was actually winning his last fight. He just got caught. You know, the way he's fighting, Ty is ready to go pro. I mean... You asked me that a year ago, Ty's never going to be pro. Now, the dedication he's put in training at Black House now, and the hard work, and he's listening, and he's being a smarter fighter. He's evolved. You remember how he was before? It was like, man, what are you guys doing with this guy in the cage?
I mean, I'm happy to hear that. And what weight's he fighting at now?
155.
That's where he should be. He's got a big build, even though he's not the tallest guy. He's got a big build. I couldn't see him going down to 45. 55 is probably where he should be.
Started off at 205.
Yeah, I'm a 205er, and I'd have to cut weight. And I'm 6'2 and a half, 225 pounds walking around. That's a 205er.
No, exactly, not 5'8 like he is.
Oh, so what are you guys saying? I'm 5'6, 205, so I shouldn't fight in that weight class? Ouch.
Walking around? Oh, hey, you got to take that one on the chin there.
I was just born naturally gifted. What can I say?
5'6". And you and Tony Padilla are really long-lost twin brothers.
Hey, I was adopted in California in the early 70s, so you never know. Now, I'm curious, you know, because we had a lot of amateurs who listened to the show and beginning pros. Do you feel that it is important for a fighter? I know not every fighter is going to sign with you and come to you and get representation and help from you, but do you think it's important to find a management or somebody that has legal knowledge like yourself, somebody who has a background in that before they came into the sports world?
As an amateur?
Yeah, like if you know, because everybody says, "Hey, I'm your uncle. I can take care of managing you," or you know, your best friends like, "Oh, I can manage you." It's nothing, you know. I mean, how important is it to have somebody who understands the sport as well as the legal aspects?
Well, as an amateur, and you'll probably ruffle a lot of feathers and piss a lot of people off. There's nobody who's really going to manage you as an amateur. It just there's literally no money in it. I mean, I'm thinking everything about money, but there's no one. You could have someone advise you, like someone called me who I trained and said, "Hey, they want me to do this or do that." And I said, "Absolutely not." Like I was cornering a fighter. It was 2010, and it was my training partner. And what happened was they gave out the gloves, camo, you know, the white camo glove, 7 ounces. And they said, "Hey, the guy before you lost his gloves. Can he share your gloves?" And I looked at that promoter and said, "There's no way in hell we're doing that. Go get him some different gloves. That's $40. Go get him from the commission. There's no sharing gloves. First of all, it's not hygienic, but they need someone, if they can't do it, to do what I just did, to ask questions and find out things." I mean, Ray and I were at an event, promoter to go unnoted as well, where there was really no warm-up area. It was a conference room with marble floors. How are you going to work on your grappling or shots or even hit pads and marble floors? Just someone to say, "You know what, we're out of here. You know, someone, this is garbage. You shouldn't have to do this." It was able to walk away for you. And the ability to ask questions, you know,
but you know,
take care of your career.
That day you talked about ended up being one of the best nights in takedown history.
That was great. You made the most of it.
We made the most of it.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
It wasn't a one-man show, it was the whole team. But, you know, hey, Nick, you know, it's been a pleasure having you on, bro. You know, if anybody needs to get a hold of you to explore anything that you have for them, you know, regardless of MMA, if it's pro baseball, pro football, because, you know, I know you have some of my other friends out in other sports, you know, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, the best way to get a hold of me, and I want to put this out there, if you're a pro fighter at this point, and you have a contract, and you're not so sure about it, contact me. Find me on Facebook, Nick Maddens, or you can email me at NPM, Nicholas Paul Maddens, at ProSportsRetirement.com. Or if you just have a question, even being an amateur, you know, I probably can't spend an hour on the phone with you, not to be rude. I can't do it. But if you want to say, "Hey, what do I do about this? What do I do about that?" You know, just for having me on, I'd be more than happy to help. You know, but being a pro fighter, you don't really know what's going on, or maybe leaving it to your trainer. And I'm a firm believer trainers should train. Trainers should manage. You shouldn't be the same guy. Don't wear too many hats. So if you have that contract, I'd gladly look at you for free. If you need some help in negotiation, that's something we discuss later. But that's the best way to get a hold of me. Facebook, just Nick Madden. It's my personal account. Or my website's up at prosportsretirement.com. And that's the best way to contact me.
And Nick, can they get to you about contracts, A, on fighting, like a contract with a promotion, a contract with a manager or a gym or a sponsorship, or everything's open to you?
Pretty much. I mean,
okay.
if they mention Saturday Night Fights, they mention your name, mention anyone's name that I know, I mean, whatever, just put it out there. I mean, the thing is, if someone's, I mean, I'll help people as much as I can as a favor, but favors become missions, that's tough. That's when it gets hard. But if someone says, hey, look at this sponsorship contract I have. And the thing is, a lot of pro fighters, one, don't have a contract. Say, hey, we'll sponsor you and send you a case of coconut water. You know, that doesn't really help with your cell phone bill, does it?
That's a good point. You know, you know, I mean, I can drink a lot of water, but it ain't paying, you know, to get my phone turned back on.
Exactly. Or rent, or even a train. Any gym worth its salt will make some people pay something to train there. I mean, the worst thing a fighter can do is walk into a gym and say, hey, I'll fight for your gym. That doesn't help a gym. That really doesn't help anybody.
You know, I mean, that's such a sad thing today, and I know you see it repeatedly where, you know, gyms, promoters, management are taking advantage by wording contracts in their favor. And because somebody like myself might not be educated enough to understand some of the terminology and lingo that people slide into a contract. You know, do you see a lot of that, or is it just sporadic to where you see people blatantly in contracts screwing over fighters?
Just here and there. And it'd
okay.
be like a simple point. Like, it's not all, they're not all promoters are bad. Just have to be wary of them. It's like obtaining a mortgage. You know, that guy's not your best friend. He's making commission on it. You got to realize that. And, not like I said, not everyone's bad, but, you know, you got to look at the finer print. You know, if you're fighting, let's say, at a Indian gaming casino, and you know they got rooms, and the promotion offers you one night in a hotel versus two nights, push for two. And just look for that. Or look, one thing to really look out for is what they're going to be liable for medical expenses. And what they'll be liable for if anything goes wrong with catastrophic injury, where you can't train anymore, or at worst, you can't function as you used to be. Because that's, I mean, even though, you know, it's highly unlikely, and everyone talks about Anderson Silva, me kicking thousands and thousands of times in my life, I can't bring myself to watch that video, but it's not tennis. You're going in there with another highly trained athlete, and you could get hurt, and you need to protect yourself. Not just in the cage of the ring.
Now you touched on that real quick, but these fighters fighting these non-sanctioned fights on these Indian reservations, you know,
right.
a lot of them don't have insurance coverage. So what would your advice be to these fighters trying to take these fights?
Well, and we're not mentioning specific venues, right, Ray?
I could.
No, let's not. but they don't. I'm sorry if I didn't name it correctly. I know you have a Native American heritage, right? But on the reservations, because don't they generally pay well comparatively?
No, they do. No, they do not. They.
I thought they
pay a lot less
really
than
thought.
Sanctioned events.
So even in California.
Yeah, because most of the promoters, like here, I know up here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of the promoters, they're only getting the ticket sales. The commission from the, you know, the liquor, the food, the and they're paying a portion of the merchandise, you know, to the casino. So these, you know, the promoters are looking to pay as least amount as possible because they're not getting none of the beer sales.
I mean,
yeah,
that may be the way it works in Pacific Northwest, but down here, I mean, a lot of guys take fights at you know, at these venues because they generally pay more. I mean,
no, they do not. 95% of them pay on ticket sales only.
Only? Even King of the Cage?
Oh, no, King of the Cage, that's a sanctioned event.
Oh, but you're referring only to non-sanctioned events. Oh,
yes.
Don't touch those. Period. I'm sorry. We were talking about apples and oranges that moment. I thought you were just talking about, you know, the reservation fights. A non-sanctioned fight, those days are over. Like a few of the pro fighters that fought, you know, would start training when I did, you know, 2004 or 5. A guy I trained with who fought really well in Strikeforce and since retired, he told me his first fight was in a bar and he was 19. He was a standout collegiate wrestler and he's fighting a 30-year-old guy with very little teeth. avoid that. You know, I just as a blanket statement, avoid non-sanctioned fights. Just avoid them entirely. You know, if there's no amateur commission, you know, find a way to find a low-level pro sanctioned fight. You know, just safeguard yourself.
As far as what you're saying, too, about, you know, some of these reservations do pay better than most. Like Tachi pays very well.
I know.
King of the Cage is about, they're about even with the Bamas.
Right.
You know, the money isn't that much better. It's about the same. But, you know, it's
funny because it's less up here, bro. And I'm not going to say any names, but this weekend I looked at somebody's contract for a set of fights for King of the Cage.
Right.
And what they offered was 700 less and 1200 less than what the fighters ended up getting on a local promotion.
All right. So now we don't have names involved, then, or fighters. How much? Explain to me the terms of the contract. How many fights? How much?
It was we'll just take the one person that I know really well on a personal level. It was 3 fights. It was 17 and 8. And then the second fight was 17 and 8. If they won both fights, the third one would be for 2001. So 3,000 ultimate payout on the third fight. Now, this is somebody who's on the cusp of literally being signed to one of the biggest, you know, companies out there. And that's part of the reason
right.
why they backed out and did the one fight local deal for more money. But, you know, that's, you know, what do you think is a fair, you know, when you look at a contract like that, 3 fights, you're 9-2 as a pro fighter, you're on the cusp of being able to make it to one of the big shows. Do you think that that's too less? If that was your client, would you be like, look, you got to bump up the pay more?
Well, that's all room for negotiation. But thing is, when you're 9-2, do you really want to be in a 3-fight deal?
Very good point.
But then you also got to weigh the fact that when you fight for King of the Cage, you're fighting on national TV.
Locked down to an exclusive contract. And I'll be honest, don't get me wrong, it's great to be on MAV TV, but it's not live anymore. It's a week to 2 weeks delay. So, yeah, you're on national TV, but sometimes it takes people 2 weeks to be able to see your fight.
And oftentimes, people's attention spans aren't that long. I mean, honestly, I tried to watch Tarion's fight. I mean, I have DirecTV, you know, and I'm not one to turn on MAV TV very often, if ever. It was a pain in the ass to find MAV TV. I saw a King of the Cage or some MMA promotion, and it wasn't Tarion's. I was like, oh, really? You know, and it just seemed. I don't think that's a big payoff because just think of your audience on that one. I mean, you got to be a diehard MMA fan or be related to somebody to go that length.
Yeah, because we run it in the bar. Don't get me wrong. You know, I run a bar, and one of our big niches is we support local MMA. You know, all the fighters we put on the events, and we run the MAV TV. You know, and they do the King of the Cage marathon every week, and it's usually the previous 3 events and not the last 2, you know. So out of the 5 events in the last 5 weeks, you'll get 3 of them, but it won't be the most recent 2. And then the following week, they'll add, you know, the previous weeks, and then, you know, you'll be in that same always 2 weeks behind roughly. And like you said, it's hard. I watch it, and I actually called Ray the other day. I said, hey, which one did Ty fight on? Because they were running King of the Cage all day, but it wasn't his event. They ran every event up to his and then stopped. So for me, you know, I was sitting there all day, literally 6 hours waiting to get to his event, and it didn't get there. It stopped one event short. So, you know, I don't know if that's as big of a payoff as, you know, like Budo fights. I'll use them as an example. I know that 7,500 people on an internet stream doesn't sound like a lot, But when you sell 1,300, you know, tickets in, you know, for the in-seat venue and you max it out and then you put another 7,500 on a live stream, that's a good turnout. Is it MAV TV? Maybe, maybe not, because I don't know what MAV TV numbers are. But, you know, I can't always say that just because you're going to, you know, fight for MAV TV, it's a bonus to me.
But the thing is, it's not just about, excuse me, it's not just about the viewers. It's about the right eyes seeing you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you could be at an event, there's 400 people, and there's two or three people in the stands that, whether one, sponsor you for something, like somebody owns a bar. You know what? I like the way you fight. I like your composure. I like the demeanor in there. You know, let me help you out somewhere or another, you know, and, you know, like, put me on your banner. You know, maybe the people, the 7,500 streaming, they have no interest in that. They can't truly help them. I'm sorry about that, guys. But that's what you got to think about. Not necessarily the amount of eyes, but the right eyes. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me? I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I
must say that's a very
that.
Valid point. I didn't know. I was just waiting for you to finish. I thought that's a very valid point about the eyes that see you. You know, it's the same as, you know, a high school football player in South Texas. You know, he might play for a subpar school, but he might be that superstar, and it might just take that one recruiter from, you know, A&M or SMU or UT or Oklahoma to see you play that one game, and boom, you're in the door. And MAV TV can offer you that, probably a lot better chance of somebody important, whether a sponsor or fight promoter, seeing you on MAV TV versus the internet stream. You know, my concern these days is, and you might think I sound like a jackass saying this, but I'm a big stickler for.
I would have said that already, bud.
I think a fighter should never sign more than a one fight contract. I think your talent should be good enough that people are bidding for you. I think I would like to see more fighters at the upper echelon say, look, one fight contract, because if World Series wants to offer me 30-30 and Zuf only wants to offer me 26-26, I'm jumping there. And then the next fight I win, the next fight, maybe Bellator and Zuf are both bidding to get me in for 51. You know, I think the sport would see fighters get paid more. I could be wrong because I don't do what you do, but I think fighters...
No, I agree with you in that way, non-exclusivity. However, I don't know if any other promotion but Zuffa pays guys between fights to train. Like, my buddies just negotiated a guy, I don't mention names, but they signed him a 3-fight deal. I think it was, you know, escalating something like 30, 40, 50, but they would pay him for every month not fighting $3,000 to stay in shape so he wouldn't have to get a job, so he would, you know, be the best fighter in their promotion. That's when you take a multi-fight deal. You know, locally, as you're coming up, go one by one. Let your performance speak for itself. And
yeah, because, I mean, people aren't, you know, I say it, you know, I'm a big firm believer of, you know, fighting overseas. I know there's a lot of money to be made. I know because I've got friends and I've seen contracts and I've got managers that are close buddies who, you know, tell me things occasionally on the cool. But, you know, you're right. I mean, if you can get a contract, whether it's with, you know, Bama or Zuffa or M1, and they're willing to help financially cover you in between the fights, I agree. Take the long-term deal, you know, because even if you're sitting on the shelf, you're still making money to survive. Now, on the other hand,
right,
I've seen guys like Kenny Gardner, and I use him as a prime example, going over to M1, making $200,000, $100,000 for the win, $100,000 for the bonus, you know, sponsorship money. So there's the availability, if you can sell yourself and you're a winning athlete, to go to another promotion and be a poster boy and make money, if that's what your ultimate
right.
goal is to do.
I mean, the UFC, just really, Zuffa's not everything. It really isn't. And even though we don't have the competition level of pride, which I think a lot of MMA purists really pride themselves on enjoying, I loved it. It was like a comic book watching a pride event. But
oh, yeah.
I know you guys remember that, but Zuffa's not Zuppa's not everything. I mean, there are other venues. Like, it's not the World Series of Fighting, M1. I mean, it's there. But, you know, in terms of exposure and sponsorship, UFC is where it's at in terms of just exposure, pure exposure. But someone like Kenny Gardner, I think, you know, M1, that's perfect. That doesn't come around very often. M1, aren't they more heavyweight-driven? A lot more heavyweight-driven?
They were in the past, but in the last, like, 2 years, they've really developed the 145, 155, 170 weight classes. I mean, they're starting – you got guys, you know, like Morat, who's, you know, just took out Lee Morrison in a war from America. You know, one of the best wrestlers I've ever seen, great guy, you know, but – they're starting to really develop those 145 through 170 weight classes because of some of those guys are coming in from the Sambo sport now and from Wushu, you know. So we're starting to see a change there, and they've really been heavy on American fighters in the last 18 months. I mean, they've been signing American fighters like it's going out of style. And the money, and trust me, the money is solid. It's better entry money there than most two-fight UFC guys are getting.
Plus, you get to see the world.
Bam! Now, that's the reason why you fight. You get paid to travel and do what you love. And I think that is something that's also should be looked at as a young pro is, don't just sit here and hope Zuffa calls you tomorrow. Take that fight in, you know, Bangkok for Dare MMA. Go ahead and go down to Jungle Fights in Brazil. Go ahead to EFC Africa. You want to talk about exposure. EFC Africa, dollar for dollar, pound for pound, can give the UFC a run for money any day of the week. But they're
watch
only an African
jungle
base.
Fights,
jungle fights. Woo.
Watch out for they're jungle fights. A friend of mine, 30 minutes before he fought, he was fighting an entirely different guy. And
yep.
Something tells me that might happen. And I think he warmed up in a shower.
We just talked
there
about
like a locker room.
We literally were just talking about this before you came on the show about we did an MMA draft, and one of the kids we picked was Jose Diaz, and one of the guys out of who works for my company, Madhouse, Arkansas, mm-hmm. had picked him because he'd been following him his career, and we were talking about how he got an opponent change either the day of or the day before in a title fight.
That's wrong.
Yeah, and it was a jungle fight.
Could they do that? Is there some... Yeah, I mean, think about it. Do you watch the UFC in Brazil?
Yeah.
What's going on there? I mean, they're putting out solid American fighters, but they're not putting out the best. They're showcasing the best of Brazil versus solid, good American fighters. And it's almost, rolls your eyes and makes you want to shake your head.
I agree.
That's just my opinion. I mean, I'm not putting it on blast here. I've tried real hard not to do that since we've been talking, but it's the truth. And you have to consider, like I said before, when you're being set up for a loss. You really do.
Well, you know, Nick, I'm hoping that maybe down the road we can get you to come back on. Maybe we'll do a call-in show night with you if that's something you'd be down to do, and we'll, like, pump it all week and let fighters around the world know that they can call in and ask you questions, if that would be something you'd be down for.
Sure, just like on the spot, like, hey, I'm talking to this guy, and it's in Knoxville, Tennessee, and he's telling me this and that and this and that. Well, the number one rule I'd say to save any calls before that, anything anybody tells you, get it in writing. And not only in writing, in plain English. Because people think lawyers do this, you know, highly complex language and knowledge. You don't go to law school to learn the law. You go to law school a certain way, I think. And oftentimes, plain English is how you need to see it. But to answer your question, yeah, I'd be definitely love to do that for you guys.
Because I've been getting hit up all night between Twitter and Facebook with, you know, people like, you know, obviously enjoying the interview, but people wanting to ask questions. So, you know, folks, give us some time. We'll reschedule another show and we'll make it a whole show like tonight with just Nick, and we'll do open lines and let you folks call in with questions. Understand that if you try to bring some super four-tier complicated question where he, you know, he's not going to be able to answer, don't expect him to do that.
I can answer it, but just know it's not love line. Don't go drowning off about things that that we all care about. You just, you know, get right to the point. Like you're talking to a 12-year-old with one of their earbuds in to say, look, this happened and this happened and that happened. That's what I tell all my clients before a deposition. Just keep it real short and real sweet, and things will go much easier today.
Yeah, there's no reason to give me a background
again,
story.
Yeah, hooray.
But, you know, I can't believe it. And almost an hour's flown by talking to you. I mean, this has been just an enjoyable interview.
Yeah, I thought you guys had me for 20 minutes. Who did I send the bill to?
Ray, that P.O. box.
I'll tell you what, Nick, let me go ahead and I'll call Mags up and I'll have him pay you in beer.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. You know what?
No bill,
no anything. Sometimes. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, finish. You finish.
No bill, no anything. This is my way. You know, I work with vets as well. And, you know, one thing I learned, I deal with a lot of doctors in what I do. And this guy, I walk into his house, I took the first step in. I don't want to say what came out of my mouth, you know. But I said, you know, how do you put that when you're not trying to swear? How do you say the F word? I said, F. I got to make more money. And he's a black belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu, as well as being a very accomplished orthopedic surgeon. And I see him helping guys drain their ears. I see him helping their range of motion. Sometimes it's not all about the money. You just want to help people, but sometimes people take it too far. But then you just got to, you know, let them know, say, hey, this is what I can do for you. But that being said, a call-in show? Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, people don't call in and talk shit, do they?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm... Occasionally we get a prank caller every once in a while, and they're usually pretty worth letting them on anyway, so.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we'll get like probably one. I had my first one with them 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I mean, we've had some the Travis Luter prank caller is the all-time greatest prank caller. I mean, that guy got everything.
Travis.
He burnt us up.
Travis Luter? Oh, man. My last memory of Travis Luter, and I think most people's last memory of Travis Luter, is you have a title fight against Anderson Silva, and you don't make weight. Well, where's your head? No, really. I mean, I'm not calling him out. I just objectively speaking.
Look, it's funny because we just worked an event, I don't know, 5 months ago, where Travis and his team was down there, down outside San Antonio, and that dude's well over 300 pounds now.
You know what? And a lot of my NFL clients are like, and I kind of feel bad about what I said right now. Think about it. These guys put their bodies through hell. Do you really feel like working out after fighting 30 MMA fights? Do you really feel like 24 hours crossing a treadmill?
No.
Nope.
Hey,
exactly.
And
I feel bad
Ray,
about that. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Ray, make sure you get me all of Nick's information so I can put it up on MMA Madhouse on their Facebook and get it out there for a lot of the fighters. You know, so, hey, I'll apologize now if you start getting people from, like, Brazil and Canada and Norway calling you, you know, asking, you know, for your services. So it happens.
Best way to get a hold of his email, and I could give you a faster response. And I provided my email. Ray, you got my business card. That's the best response I can give people. And also, one last thing for fighters. Get everything on paper. A lot of guys talk a big talk, but what matters is on paper, and that's it. So that being said, when you contact me, I prefer email over anything.
Boom, folks, you heard it there. Nick, it's Sunday night. I know you got a work week ahead of you. You probably got 50 emails to return right now. I want to thank you on behalf of Sunday Night Fights Live and MMAMadhouse.com for coming on, and I look forward to doing another show with you in the future real soon.
I loved it. Anytime, guys.
Thanks a lot, Nick.
Take care.
Ray, you scored big time with your boy there. Man, that guy's straight up legit cool. I like talking to him.
Dude, he's even a better person in person. I mean, Nick is a great guy, you know. You know, he's one of the very few people I can call my brother, you know. You know, he's my redheaded white boy brother. Yeah, he's a great guy. He's always offering me, you know, advice. Sometimes I don't even ask for it. He calls me up, hey, bro, you know, you got to be careful with this, got to be careful with that, watch out for this. Or when he hears what I signed a fighter, hey, you know, that's a great find for you. And, you know, Nick he's always got my back.
people. Time to disperse. Party's over.